Welcome to the Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this March the 28th on the West Coast, now March the 29th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. We'd also like to welcome anyone listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, and hope you also enjoy tonight's show. Well, I had a guest booked, as I do every Monday night. It's been Dr. Atruant, but he had some important business to take care of this evening, so he couldn't be with us. But fret not, we're going to have an interesting show tonight. I thought it might be timely, actually, for us to revisit some of the teachings of Krishnamurti. Jiddu Krishnamurti, who devoted his whole life to addressing the problems of humanity. And he did so very eloquently. Some disagree with some of the things he said, but what he did throughout his career was basically show us what's really going on in the world. Bottom line, it depends not on who the political leaders are of any particular government or who heads what corporation. He spoke much about responsibility and human consciousness and us knowing who we are. And he strived to make us aware of that. And so we're going to be listening in a few minutes to his interview with Dr. Alan W. Anderson. I've played a few of those on some past shows. And I'm hoping that anyone who wants to listen to The Art of Listening to really pay attention. You might even want to grab a notepad and a pen or a pencil. What's going on in Japan? Well, we are hearing lots of bad news. We're hearing stories about radiation, of course. Those have been ongoing for some time, but we're not hearing accurately what's going on, and we shouldn't expect to. There's a lot of fear being cast out there for you to wallow in, if that's your choice, or you can take the high road and work on some of the things that we talk about, and certainly what you're going to hear tonight. But I also have something to share as far as what is going on in Japan, and that's the music of Hiromi Uehara and one of her compositions, a solo composition called Somewhere. Thank you. Was Miss Hiromi Uehara. Very, very well played piece. One of her own original compositions. Very prolific classical pianist, but also jazz pianist. She studied music here in the United States at the Berklee School of Music in Boston. And I would venture to guess that she brought a lot, she taught a lot there to the instructors. We may listen to a little bit more of her as we go on into tonight's show, maybe at the end of the show, after you listen to The Art of Listening.
outset of his life's work, he repudiated all connections with organized religions and ideologies and said that his only concern was to set men absolutely, unconditionally free. He is the author of many books, among them The Awakening of Intelligence, The Urgency of Change, Freedom from the Known, and The Flight of the Eagle. This is one of a series of dialogues between Krishnamurti and Dr. Alan W. Anderson, who is professor of religious studies at San Diego State University, where he teaches Indian and Chinese scriptures and the oracular tradition. Dr. Anderson, a published poet, received his degree from Columbia University and the Union Theological Seminary. He has been honored with a Distinguished Teaching Award from the California State Universities.
Mr. Krishnamurti, last time we were speaking together, we were going into beauty. And just as we came to the end of our conversation, the question of seeing and its relation to the transformation of man, which is not dependent on knowledge or time, was something we promised ourselves we would take up next time we could come together.
So what is seeing and what is listening and what is learning? I think there are three related to each other.
Seeing.
Learning, hearing, and seeing. Mm-hmm. What is seeing? Perceiving. Do we actually see? Or do we see through a screen, darkly? Screen of prejudice, screen of our idiosyncrasies, experiences, our wishes, pleasures, fears. So and our, obviously, our images about that which we see and about ourselves. So we have this screen after screen between us and the object of perception. So do we ever see the thing at all? Or is it the seeing is colored by our knowledge, botanical experience, so on, so on, so on, or our images which we have about that thing, or the belief in which my mind is conditioned, the mind is conditioned, and therefore prevents the seeing, or is the memories which mind has cultivated prevents the seeing. So seeing may not take place at all.
Mm-hmm.
And is it possible for the mind not to have these images, conclusions, beliefs, memories, prejudices, fears, and without having those screens, just to look? I think this becomes very important, because when there is a seeing of the thing which I am talking about, when there is a seeing, you can't help but acting. There's no question of postponement.
Or succession.
Succession.
Or interval.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because when action is based on a belief, a conclusion, an idea, then that action is time-binding.
Mm-hmm.
And that action will inevitably bring conflict and sorrow, regrets and all the rest of it. So it becomes very important to find out what it is to see, to perceive, what it is to hear. Do I ever hear? When one is married, as a wife or a husband, or a girl or a boy, do I ever hear her or him? Or I hear her or him through the image I have built about her or him. Through the screen of irritations, screen of annoyance, dominion, all that, that dreadful things that come in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So, do I ever hear directly what you say? Without translating, without transforming it, without twisting it. Do I ever hear a bird cry?
Mm-hmm.
Or a child weep? Or a man crying in pain? You follow, sir? Do I ever hear anything?
In a conversation we had about a year ago, I was very struck by something you said, which I regard as, for myself personally, immensely valuable. You said that hearing was doing nothing to stop or interfere with seeing. Hearing is doing nothing,
nothing.
To stop seeing.
Seeing.
That is very remarkable because in conversation, the notion of hearing is regarded as intimately associated with command. We will say, won't we, now hear me out. And the person thinks that they have to lean forward in the sense of do something voluntarily.
Right.
It's as though they have to screw themselves up into some sort of agonized twist here, not only to please the one who is insisting that they're not hearing, but to get up some hearing their own.
Quite.
Yes.
Does a human being, I-O-X, listen at all? And what takes place when I do listen? Listen in the sense without any interference, without any interpretation, conclusion, like on this, you know, all that takes place. What happens when I actually listen? Say, look. We said just now, we cannot possibly understand what beauty is if we don't understand suffering, passion.
Mm-hmm.
You hear that statement. What does the mind do? It draws a conclusion. It has formed an idea, verbal idea, words, hears the words, draws a conclusion, and an idea, say a statement of that kind, has become an idea. Then the mind says, how am I to carry out that idea? And that becomes a problem.
Of course it does, because the idea doesn't conform to nature.
Yeah.
And other people have other ideas, and they want to get theirs embodied. Now we're up against the clash.
Yes. So, can I listen to that? Can the mind listen to that statement without any forming an abstraction? Just listen. And either agree or disagree. Just actually listen. Completely to that statement.
If I'm following you, what you're saying is that were I to listen adequately, or just, let's say, listen, because it's not a question of more or less.
Yeah.
I'm absolutely listening, or I'm absolutely not listening.
That's true.
I would not have to contrive an answer.
No, because you know, you are in it.
Yes. So, like the cat, the action and the seeing are one.
Yes.
They're one act.
That's right.
They're one act.
That's right. So can I listen to a statement? And see the truth of the statement or the falseness of the statement. Not in comparison, but in the very statement that you're making. I don't know if I'm making myself clear.
Yes, you're making yourself very clear.
That is, I listen to the statement. Beauty can never exist without passion. And passion comes from sorrow. I listen to that statement. I don't abstract an idea of it or make an idea from it. I just listen. What takes place? You may be telling the truth, or you may be making a false statement. I don't know. Because I'm not going to compare.
No. You're going to see.
I just listen. Which means I'm giving my total attention. Just listen to this. You see what's going on. I give my total attention to what you're saying. Then it doesn't matter what you say or don't say.
Of course.
What is important, my act of listening. And that act of listening has brought a miracle, brought about a miracle of complete freedom from all that your statements, whether true, false, real, my mind is completely attentive. What more? Without attention means no border. Moment I have a border, I begin to fight you. Agree, disagree. Moment attention has a frontier, then concepts arise. If I listen to you completely without a single interference of thought or ideation or mentation, just listen to that. The miracle has taken place, which is my total attention absolves me, my mind, from all the statements. I don't know if I'm...
Yes, you are.
Therefore, my mind is extraordinarily free to act.
Well, this has happened for me on this series of our conversations. With each one of these conversations, since this is being videotaped, one begins when one is given the sign. And we're told when the time has elapsed. And one ordinarily, in terms of activity in this sort, is thinking about the production as such, you see. But one of the things that I've learned is in our conversation, I've been listening very intensely, and yet I've not had to divide my mind.
No, sir, that's the...
And yet, this is... If I'm responding correctly to what you have been teaching, well, I know you don't like that word, what you've been saying, and I understand why teaching was a wrong word here. There is that very first encounter that the mind engages itself in.
Yes.
How can I afford not to make the distinction between paying attention to the aspects of the program on the production aspect of it and still engage our discussion?
Right.
But the more intensely the discussion is engaged, the more efficiently all the mechanism is accomplished.
Yeah.
We don't believe that in the sense that not only to start with will we not believe it, but we won't even try it out. There's no guarantee from anybody in advance. What we're told, rather, is this. Well, you'll get used to it. And yet performers have stage fright all their lives. So clearly they don't get used to it.
No, sir, it is. Because, don't you think it is, our minds are so commercial. Unless I get a reward from it, I won't do a thing. And my mind lives in the marketplace. One's mind.
Mm.
I give you this, give me that.
And there's an interval in between.
You follow?
Right.
We are so used to commercialism, both spiritually and physically, that we don't do anything without a reward, without gaining something, without a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It is all must be an exchange, not a gift, but exchange. I give you this, and you give me that. I torture myself religiously, and God must come to me. It's all matter of commerce.
Fundamentalists have a phrase that comes to mind with respect to their devotional life. They say, "I am claiming the promises of God," and this phrase, in the context of what you're saying, is my goodness, what that couldn't lead to in the mind.
I know. So you see, when one goes very deeply into this. When action is not based on an idea, formula, belief, then seeing is the doing.
Mm-hmm.
Then what is seeing and hearing, which we went into, then the seeing is complete attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the doing is in that attention. And the difficulty is, how, people will ask, how will you maintain that attention?
Yes, and they haven't even started.
Yes, no, how will you maintain it?
Yes.
Which means they are looking for a reward.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I'll practice it. I will do anything to maintain that attention in order to get something in return. Mm-hmm. Attention is not a result. Attention has no cause. I mean, what has cause becomes has an effect, and the effect becomes the cause. It's a circle. But attention isn't that. Attention doesn't give you a reward. Attention, on the contrary, there is no reward or punishment. Because it's no frontier. I don't.
Yes, this calls up an earlier conversation we had when you mentioned the word virtue. And we explored it in relation to power.
Exactly.
And we're told what is difficult for a thinking child to believe, given the way the child's brought up. But he's required somehow to make his way through it. That virtue is its own reward.
Oh, that just is good.
And of course, it's impossible to see what is sound about that.
Yes, correct.
Under the conditioned situation in which he lives.
They're just an idea, sir.
It's
an
idea. So now we tuck that back and asking too much of reward for something good that they did. We tell them, well, have you forgotten that virtue is its own reward? Yes. It becomes a form of punishment.
Then, hearing. Then what is learning? Because they're all interrelated. Learning, seeing,
and
hearing.
And acting.
Action, and all that. It's all in one book. They are not separate chapters. It's one chapter.
Distinctions, no divisions.
No, yeah. So what is learning? Is learning a process of accumulation? And is learning non-accumulative? We're putting both together. Let's look at it.
Let's look at it, yes.
One learns a language, Italian, French, whatever it is, and accumulates words. And the irregular verbs and so on, and then able to speak. There is learning a language and being able to speak. Learning how to ride a bicycle. Learning how to drive a car. Learning how to put together a machine. How to electronics and so on. So those are all learning to acquire knowledge in action.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm asking, is there any other form of learning? That we know. We are familiar with the acquisition of knowledge. Now, is there any other kind of learning? Learning which is not accumulated and acting. I don't know.
Yes, when we've accumulated it all, we haven't understood anything on that account.
Yes. Yes, and I learn in order to gain a reward or in order to avoid punishment. I learn a particular job, a particular craft in order to earn a livelihood. That is absolutely necessary. Otherwise, I'm asking, is there any other kind of learning? That's routine. That's cultivation of memory, and the memory, which is the result of experience and knowledge, that is stored in the brain, and that operates. Mm-hmm. When asked to do ride a bicycle, drive a car, and so on. Now, is there any other kind of learning, or only that? When one says, I have learned from my experience, it means I have learned, stored up from that experience certain memories, and those memories either prevent, reward, or punish. So, then all such forms of learning are mechanical. Mm-hmm. and the brain and education is trained, the education is to train the brain to function in routine, mechanically. Mm-hmm. Because in that there's great security. Mm-hmm. Then it's safe. And so, our mind becomes mechanical. My father did this, I do this, and you follow. The whole business mm-hmm. is mechanical. Now, is there a non-mechanical brain at all? A non-utilitarian, in that sense,
yes.
learning, which has neither future nor past, therefore not time-binding. I don't know if I'm making you.
Don't we sometimes say, I've learned from experience, when we wish to convey something that isn't well conveyed by that expression, we wish to convey an insight that we don't feel can be, in the strict sense, dated.
Listen, you see, sir, do we learn anything from experience? We have had, from history began, written history, 5,000 wars. I read somewhere, 5,000 wars. Killing, maimed. And have we learned anything? Have we learned anything from sorrow? Man has suffered. Have we learned anything from experience of the agony of uncertainty and all the rest of it? So when we say we have learned, I question, you follow? It seems such a terrible thing to say, I've learned from experience. You have learned nothing except in the field of knowledge. I don't know.
Yes, may I say something here that just passed in recall? We were talking about sorrow before, and I was thinking of a statement of St. Paul's in his letter to the Romans, where there's a very unusual sequence of words where he says we rejoice in tribulations. Now some people have thought he must have been a masochist or something in making such a statement, but that certainly seems to me bizarre. We rejoice in tribulations, and then he says because tribulation works, and in the Greek this means that there's energy mm-hmm. involved, works patience experience. Now, that's a very unusual order because we usually think that if we have enough experience, we'll learn to be patient. And he completely stands that on its head.
Yeah.
And in a context of what you're saying, that order of his words makes eminent sense. Please go on. Yes, that's really very remarkable.
You see, sir, that's why our education, our civilization, all the things about us has made our mind so mechanical, so repetitive reactions, repetitive demands, repetitive pursuits, same thing being repeated year after year. Thousands of people. My country and your country. I'll kill you, you kill me. You follow, sir? The whole thing is mechanical. Now, that means the mind can never be free. Thought is never free. Thought is always old. There is no new thought.
Well, no, it's very curious in relation to a movement within the field of religion that calls itself, or did call itself, New Thought. Yes, I was laughing at the irony of it. Yes, goodness me. Some persons, I imagine, would object to the notion that we don't learn from experience in terms of the succession of wars, because wars tend to happen sequentially, generation to generation, and you have to grow up. But that's not true, because wars, more than one war, will happen very often in the same generation.
And there hasn't been anything learned. What are they talking about? Two wars?
Yes. Hasn't been anything learned at all. At all. It's a terrifying thing to hear someone just come out and say, nobody learns anything from experience.
No, the word experience also means to go through.
Yes, yes.
But you never go through.
That's exactly right.
You always stop in the middle. Or you never begin.
Right. It means, if I'm remembering correctly in terms of its radical root, means to test, to put to test, to put a thing to the test and behave correctly while that's going on. You simply have to see. You just have to look, don't you?
Of course.
Yes.
So that comes. So as our civilization, our culture, our education has brought about a mind that is that's becoming more and more mechanical. Mm-hmm. And therefore time-binding. And therefore never sense of freedom. Freedom then becomes an idea. Mm-hmm. You play around philosophically but it's no meaning. But a man who says, now, I want to find out. Mm-hmm. I want to really go into this and discover if there is freedom. Then he has to understand the limits of knowledge. Where knowledge ends, mm-hmm. or rather, the ending of knowledge and the beginning of something totally new. I don't know if I'm conveying it.
You are. Oh, yes.
That is, sir, what is learning? If it is not mechanical, then what is learning? Is there a learning at all? Learning about what? Mm-hmm. I learn how to go to the moon. Mm-hmm. How to put up this, that, and drive, and so on. That's, in that field, there is only learning. Mm-hmm. Is there any learning in any other field? Psychological. Spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
Can I learn? Can the mind learn about what they call God?
If in learning, in the sense that you have asked this question, I must rephrase that. Now stop this ifing. When one does what I'm about to say, when one learns about God or going to the moon, in terms of the question you've asked, he can't be doing what you are pointing to if this is something added on to the list.
Sir, look,
yes,
what
of course.
Is so clear.
Of course, yes, it is.
I learn a language. Ride a bicycle, drive a car, put a machine together. That's essential. Now, I want to learn about God. Just listen to me. The God is my make. God hasn't made me in his image.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I have made him in my image. Now, and I'm going to learn about him.
Yes.
You follow?
I'm going to talk to myself.
Learn about the image which I have built. Mm-hmm. About Christ, Buddha, whatever it is. The image I have built. So I'm learning what?
To talk about talk. Yes.
Learning about the image which I have built.
Sure.
Therefore, is there any other kind of learning except mechanical learning? I don't know if you understand my question?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I certainly do.
So, there is only learning the mechanical process of life. There is no other learning.
Yes.
And see what that means.
Means freedom.
I can learn about myself. Myself is known. Known in the sense, I may not know it, but I can know by looking at myself, I can know myself. Mm-hmm. So, the myself is the accumulated knowledge of the past. Mm-hmm. The me who says, I'm greedy, I'm envy, I'm successful, I'm frightened, I'm betrayed, I regret. All that is the me. Including the soul which I have invented in the me. Oh, the Brahman, the Atman, it's all me still. The me has created the image of God. And I'm going to learn about God, which is no meaning. So, I'm going to use the word if. If there is no other learning, what takes place? You understand? Mm-hmm. I employ, the mind is used in the acquisition of knowledge in matter. We'll put it differently. In mechanical things. And when the mind is employed there, is there any other processes of learning? Which means psychologically, inwardly. Is there? The inward is the invention of thought as opposed to the outer. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If I have understood the outer, I have understood the inner. Because the inner has created the outer. Yeah, the outer in the sense of the structure, the society, the religious sanctions, all that is invented or put together by thought. The Jesus, the Christ, the Buddha, all that. And what is there to learn?
In listening to you,
see the beauty of what's coming out.
Yes. Goes back to your remark about Vedanta as the end of knowledge.
That's what I was told.
Yes. The interesting thing to me about the Sanskrit construction is that, unless I'm mistaken, it doesn't mean the end of it as a terminus, as a term, because that would simply start a new series. It's the consummation of it, which is the total end in the sense that a totally new beginning is made that very point.
That means, sir, I know, the mind knows the activity of the known.
That's right. Yes. That's the consummation of knowledge. Yes.
Of knowledge.
Yes.
Now, what is the state of the mind that is free from that and yet functions in knowledge?
And yet functions in it.
You
yes, yes. It is seeing perfectly.
Don't go into it. You'll see very strange things take place.
Mm-hmm.
What is the... Is this possible first? You understand? Because the brain and the functions mechanically. Mm-hmm. It wants security. Otherwise, it can't function. If we hadn't security, we wouldn't be here sitting together.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have security, we can have a dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
The brain can only function in complete security. Whether that security it finds in a neurotic belief, or in a neurotic belief, all beliefs and all ideas are neurotic in that sense.
Yes.
So it finds it somewhere in accepting nationality as the highest form of the good. Success is the highest virtue.
Mm-hmm.
So it finds belief, security there. Now, you're asking the mind, the brain, which has become mechanical, trained, sanctuary, to see the other field which is not mechanical. Is there another field? I don't.
No.
You follow my question?
Yes, I do. Yes. Yes, that's what's so utterly devastating.
Is there, wait, is there another field? Now, unless the brain and the mind understands the whole field, understands the movement of knowledge, it is a movement.
It's a movement, yes.
It's not just static. You're adding, taking away, putting, and so on. Unless it understands all that, it cannot possibly ask that other question.
Exactly. Exactly.
And when it does ask that question, what takes place?
This
is real meditation, you know?
This is, yes. Yes.
Which we'll go into another time. So, you see, that's what it means. One is always listening with knowledge. Seeing with knowledge.
This is the seeing through a glass darkly.
Darkly. Now, is there a listening out of silence? And that is attention. And that is not time binding. Because in that silence, I don't want anything. It isn't I'm going to learn about myself. It isn't I'm going to be punished, rewarded. In that absolute silence, I listen.
The wonder of the whole thing is that it isn't something that is done.
No.
This meditation in succession.
When we talk about meditation, we'll have to go very deep into that. Because they have destroyed that word. These shoddy little men coming from India or anywhere, they have destroyed that thing.
I heard the other day about someone who was learning transcendental meditation.
Oh, you're learning.
Of course. And they had to do it at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Pay $35 or $100 to learn that.
Yeah.
And it's so sacrilegious.
But if that is 3 o'clock in the afternoon was judgment day. If you didn't do it on according to your schedule, then the world has obviously come to an end. But ostensibly you're doing it to get free of that. So Do go ahead.
So you see, sir, that what takes place. We began this morning about beauty.
Yes.
Then passion, then suffering, then action. Action based on idea is inaction. It sounds monstrous, but there it is. And from that we said, what is seeing and what is hearing? The seeing and the listening has become mechanical. We never see anything new. Even the flower is never new, which has blossomed overnight. We say, yes, that's the rose, I've been expecting it, it has come out now, how beautiful. It's always from the known to the known. A movement in time, and therefore time-binding, and therefore never free. And yet we're talking about freedom, you know, philosophy, and the lectures on freedom, and so on, so on, so on. And the communists call it a bourgeois thing, which it is, in that sense, when you limit it to knowledge, it is foolish to talk about freedom. But there is a freedom when you understand the whole the movement of knowledge. So can you observe out of silence and observe and act in the field of knowledge. So both together in harmony.
Seeing, then, is not scheduled.
No.
Yes, of course. Of course. What a... I was just thinking about the... I suppose you'd say a classical definition of freedom in terms of the career of knowledge would be that it is a property of action, a property or quality of action for general uses. Either word would do, property or quality. And it occurred to me in the context of what we've been saying, what a horror that one could read that statement and not let it disclose itself to you.
What?
If it disclosed itself to you, you'd be up against it. You'd have to be serious.
Okay.
If you were a philosophy student and you read that and that thing began
to
operate in you, you'd say, I've got to get this settled before I go on. Maybe I'll never graduate. That's not important.
That's not important.
Right, yes.
And I was thinking, in the West as well as in the East, you have to go to the factory or the office every day of your life. Get up at 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 6 o'clock. Drive. Walk. Work, work, work. For 50 years, routine, and get kicked about, insulted, worship success, again, repetition. And then occasionally talk about God if it is convenient, and so on and so on. That is a monstrous life. And that's what we are educating our children for.
That's the real living death.
And nobody says, for God's sake, let's look at all this anew. Let's wipe our eyes clear of the past and look what we are doing. Give attention, care about what we are doing.
Now, we have this question instead. What shall we do about it? Yes, that's the question. And then that becomes... the next thing done that's added
which is
to the
continuity of the past in a different form.
And the chain is endlessly linked.
Cause becoming the effect and the effect becoming the cause. So it's a very serious thing when we talk about all this, because life becomes dreadfully serious. And it's only this serious person that lives. Not these people who seek entertainment, religious or the otherwise.
I had a very interesting occasion to understand what you're saying in class yesterday. I was trying to assist the students to see that the classical understanding of the four causes in operation is that they are non-temporally related.
Yes, sir.
And I said, when the potter puts his hand to the clay, the hand touching the clay is not responded to by the clay after the hand has touched it. And one person who was visiting the class, this person was a well-educated person, and a professor. And this struck them as maybe not so. And I could tell by the expression on the face that there was this little anguish here. So I said, well, my radar says that there's some difficulty going on. What's the matter? Well, it seems like there's a time interval. So I asked them to pick something up that was on the desk, and I said, well, now touch it with your finger and tell me at the moment of the touching with the finger whether the thing reacts to the finger after it's touched. Now, do it. Well, even to ask somebody to apply a practical test like that with respect to a datum of knowledge, like the four causes are is to interrupt the process of education as we've known it, because you teach a student about the four causes and he thinks about them. He never goes out and looks at a thing or does anything about it. And so we spent about, we were picking the stuff up in class and we were doing this until finally it seemed like a revelation that what has been said in the classical teaching of it, which, of course, in modern society is rejected, happens to be the case. This has to be seen. Watch. This is what you mean.
Yes, sir. See.
Of course. But we're back to that step there. Why was that person and so many other students following suit anguished at the point where the practical issue arose? There was a feeling, I suppose, that they were on the cliff. And naturally, alertness was required. But alertness registers that we're on a cliff. So therefore, the best thing to do is turn around and run back. Yes.
So I think, you see, we are so caught up in words. Mm-hmm. To us, the word is not the thing. The description is not the described. To us, the description is all that matters. Because we are slave to words.
And to ritual.
Ritual and all the rest.
Yes.
So, when you say, look, the thing matters more than the word, and then they say, how am I to get rid of the word? How am I to communicate if I have no word? You see how they've gone off? They're not concerned with the thing, but with the word.
Yes.
And the door is not the word. Mm-hmm. So, when we are caught up in words, the word door becomes extraordinarily important. And not the door.
And I don't really need to come to terms with the door, I say to myself, because I have the word.
Exactly.
I have it all.
So that's what education has done this. Mm-hmm. A great part of this education is the acceptance of words as an abstraction from the fact, from the what is. All philosophies are based on that. theorize endlessly how one should live, and the philosopher himself doesn't live.
Yes, I know. Especially some philosophies that have seemed to me quite bizarre in this respect. I've asked my colleagues from time to time, well, if you believe that stuff, why don't you do it? And they look at me as though I'm out of my mind, as though nobody would really seriously ask that question.
Right.
But if you can't ask that question, well, what question's worth asking?
Right.
Yes. And I was thinking about that marvelous story you told in our previous conversation about the monkey. While you were speaking about this, when she shook hands with you, nobody had told her how to shake hands.
No, it stretched out.
Yes.
And I took it.
Wasn't something that she was taught how to do through a verbal communication. It was the appropriate thing at the time.
At the time.
Without anyone measuring its appropriateness.
Quite.
isn't that something? Yes, I... I can't tell you how grateful I am to have been able to share this with you. I've seen in respect to my own activity as a teacher where I must perform therapy even on my language.
Great.
So that I don't give the student an occasion for thinking that I am simply adding to this more endless chain, link after link after link. There are two therapies here, then. There's the therapy that relates to words, and that flows out naturally. It's not a contrivance.
No.
It flows out naturally, if I've understood you correctly, from the therapy within. Now, this relates directly, as you were saying earlier, to meditation. Are we ready, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's too complicated. We must go.
I don't mean right now, but maybe in one of our next conversations.
We must discuss several things yet, sir.
Yes, yet. Before
what is love, what is death,
exactly.
What is meditation, what is the whole movement of living. We've got a great deal to
do. Oh, I do look forward very much to that. Splendid. Right.
And that was Jiddu Krishnamurti. The late Jiddu Krishnamurti and Dr. Alan W. Anderson discussing the art of listening. That recording was made back in 1974. So we're talking 36, going on 37 years ago. Think of the application of the truths that Mr. Krishnamurti actually made or brought forth. What he's talking about here is going inside oneself, objectively going inside oneself, looking at what is really going on, seeing what is really going on, not with the anticipation that you think you know what is going on, or what you are going to see. Or if you apply that to hearing, it's just a different frequency, but the information comes in a different way. He used the example of a statement being made as to whether it is true or false. And that one could know that, one could sense that or become aware, conscious of that, by avoiding the thinking process, which is what we've been taught, how we've been taught to mechanically use our minds to produce results. That is exactly what a computer program does. It's told what it can do and what it can't do and what it should do with this and what it should do with that. And so it's, despite how you may use it, it is going to put it in a format which is acceptable by those who designed it and programmed it and presented it to you as something to buy. He referred to the mind as being commercial, that every action as observed by the mind, and we're speaking about the ego, becomes a pattern or a fractal of a circle. The repetition of an event over and over again without really having an awareness as to why that event has to keep going on. He said back in 1974 that he was told by someone that there have been at least 5,000 wars in recorded history. Think about the number of wars, and we have them going on right now. They're started on a daily basis, always with this promise of freedom. It's going to bring about freedom. I heard this in regard to Libya and the no-legged Mac Daddy speech about what's going on in Libya, that we have to help them obtain freedom while our freedoms are being taken away from us. That's what I observe is going on. I see it as insanity, and I see it as not a truthful statement, because one cannot be true in one example and have the other be true when what is going on is opposite. War doesn't necessarily require bombs, fireworks. It can go on in the mind, as he presented, and I'm speaking of Krishnamurti, he presented an example of how the educational system builds these belief systems to expect reward or punishment. And punishment, by the way, is a basis of our legal system that actually masks what it hides. And that is judgment. You can go backwards and eventually you come to the core being with no ego detachment. The ego, it begins to exist when it attempts to justify, and this can be mass consciousness, this can be written into law. The ego identifies with these things because it's been trained only to see those things. We could say the art of listening is paying attention to that which we have not learned. And because we haven't learned it, we haven't put it into action, either per program or per the whim of the ego, for a variety of reasons. So what is freedom then? Freedom is the escapement of that border, as he described it, that construct. We call it the matrix, or inside the box. And though you don't see the box, and you may not see the border, certainly people aren't seeing it in the southwest of the United States, but if you don't see the border, that was a little jab there, does the border really exist? Or does it just exist in your mind because you would say associate a result, a reward or a punishment for not complying with the program. In a computer, one would take out the motherboard that kept making incorrect calculations. Once it was determined that there was nothing wrong with the language programmed into the computer. Now they're creating computers that determine what a person is going to think or even reads thoughts. It adds credibility to what Mr. Krishnamurti said when he said that the mind is mechanical. Actually, today it's become robotized. Now, what does the art of listening have to do with anything? Well, if we're paying attention to what's being said about what's going on in the world, or what's claimed to not be going on in the world, then we have something to find. We have something to discover, and out of that can something be created. That's how we solve our problems, folks. We're witnessing total insanity around the planet and a lot of fear, a lot of illusion. We've said that. Fear is not real. It's an illusion. You've been taught to accept it as a punishment or even a foreboding of possible punishment. Certainly not a reward, because if you were anticipating getting a reward, I doubt if you would be feeling fear. Yet, that's the distinction between integrity and corruption, because those who are corrupt, who think nobody knows or perceives or sees or hears what they're doing, that they're not doing anything illegal, when it's quite the opposite. We do perceive what's being done. And so we can listen to a political speech and hear the lies, especially when we've exposed the true facts on certain issues. The media still puts out the lies, though. And I heard such a show on mainstream radio this evening, justifying why we went to war in Iraq. There is no justification. It's been proven to be a hoax. Yet they still beat that mantra on mainstream TV and radio. The answers to us solving our problems are to stop pretending that we are really hearing what they're saying. We're in denial about the fact that 99.9% of what they tell us, whether you're talking about the government or secret societies or their multinational corporations, they have their interests at heart, not yours, not mine, not ours, only theirs. And it's in hearing what they're really saying, or even what I'm really saying, or what you are really saying when you're speaking, that we are going to realize that what we're searching for is already within us. And we should begin to listen for that, because it has a sound. Many of you know that. You've identified with that sound, and you understand what tonight's show is about. I'm going to return to a little bit of what's going on in Japan with some more of this beautiful angelic music from none other than Hiromi Uehara. And as I'm trying to cue this up, I want to remind my listening audience that I will have Mr. Michael Anthony on Evident Footprints tomorrow evening. Here we go. This is Hiromi Uehara.
Thank you. I would like to play a piece from one of my favorite composers. And I would like to dedicate this song to one of my heroes. He's up there, Oscar Peterson. Thank you.
That was Hiromi Uehara and an old Gershwin tune, I've Got Rhythm. Fabulous, fabulous pianist. And if you hadn't heard of her before, I encourage you to check out her music. Definitely worth it. And that is the epitome, I think, of what Mr. Krishnamurti talked about, the art of listening and taking creativity the next step, creating something new out of something something quite old, something that's been around for quite a long time. Remarkable playing and the perfect metaphor for tonight's topic. Well, we're out of time, folks. I appreciate you tuning in. Those folks over at Wind Talkers Radio Network, I want to thank them. Over at PBS Radio tonight, we had Seth Hendrick on the sound. I want to thank Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. As I mentioned before, Mr. Michael Anthony will be my guest tomorrow night, so be sure to tune in for that. In the meantime, let's pray, continue to pray for the folks in Japan, and you have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.